Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael. I'm reading from this week's San Angelo Standard Times. It's for the week of Sunday, August 16th, 2020. These articles are being read on Thursday, August 20th, and I will be reading articles all the way back to Friday, August 14th. I'll start with the most recent articles. The latest update on COVID-19 testing in San Angelo and Tom Green County, Texas. Tom Green County, August 20th, City of San Angelo. 2,996 positive cases reported. 30 new positive cases. 750 active cases. 51 currently hospitalized, 46 deaths, 34 Tom Green County residents, 12 out-of-county residents. New emergency aircraft arrives at Shannon Medical Center in San Angelo, by Colin Murphy. A new addition to the emergency medical resources available in the area recently touched down at its new home at the San Angelo Regional Airport. AirMed 2, a fixed-wing twin turboprop aircraft capable of providing the same emergency care one would find in an emergency room at a hospital, is now flying the skies over the Concho Valley. AirMed 2 is intended to complement the services provided by the AirMed 1 helicopter air ambulance. The aircraft is owned by MedTrans Air Medical Transport, which provides the maintenance crew and pilots. The medical staff and equipment on board are provided by Shannon Medical Center. Each flight will include a flight paramedic and a critical care nurse. Dr. Kelly Koenig, medical director for AirMed 1 and 2, said the new aircraft will expand upon existing resources to provide rapid emergency medical transport to a larger area in the region. It works in adjunct to AirMed 1, Koenig said. Essentially, AirMed 1 has been performing services for decades here in the community. We are going to be an extension of that service with this plane. We are essentially able to take the critical injured or ill patient from the environment they are in, whether that be an ICU or emergency department, and continue that same care that was being provided at that time to our aircraft, and then to the facility they need to go to. It's really an amazing thing for San Angelo and the surrounding communities. To add this second aircraft and crew that's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, is a profound blessing for us to have. According to information provided by Shannon Medical Center, AirMed 2 is not just outfitted with highly specialized medical equipment. The aircraft also includes avionics that are not standard on most civilian or private planes. AirMed 2 has NEXRAD radar, which allows a pilot to predict how weather will affect a flight plan, enhanced weather radar, which allows a pilot to see weather in front and to the sides of the aircraft, an integrated traffic system, which helps the pilot avoid air traffic, and a system called synthetic vision, which allows the pilot to monitor terrain in front and to the sides of the aircraft. And the articles that I am beginning to read now were published Wednesday, August 19th. Spirit Halloween returning to San Angelo for 2020 season. Some San Angelo residents were concerned after hearing rumors about Spirit Halloween not coming to town for the 2020 season. Don't be spooked. The Halloween shop is planning to open in San Angelo in early September, according to the company's website. Rumors began circulating on social media earlier this year that the store might not survive as the coronavirus pandemic moved into the summer, but the company addressed the issue with a Facebook post. We heard you're crushed, disheartened, and downright sad. Well, don't worry, the rumors aren't true, the post declared. It's been a challenging year, but we promise to keep the Halloween spirit alive. San Angelo will have a pop-up store in Sunset Plaza at 4126 Sunset Drive, according to the business's store finder. There is not a store slated for Abilene, according to the site. Spirit Halloween has a wide variety of Halloween decor, animatronics, costumes, and accessories that are perfect for trick-or-treating or throwing a Halloween party, the website states. The company said it was planning 1,400 locations nationwide. The San Angelo store is planned to open September 5th, 2020. Despite Facebook viral post, Abilene police say no attempted kidnapping. By Timothy Chip, Abilene Reporter News. Abilene police on Wednesday discounted a local woman's Facebook post Tuesday concerning attempted child kidnapping at a local park. Early investigations suggest there was never a kidnapping attempt, Abilene Police Chief Stan Standridge said in an email to media Wednesday morning. But at a news conference Wednesday afternoon, Standridge said the incident is deeply concerning, regardless of whether a potential crime was committed. It began with a Facebook post in which one user of the social media platform accused a woman by name, saying she attempted to kidnap her child from Nelson Park while the child was with a babysitter that morning. The Nelson Park incident. Standridge said investigators spoke with both the babysitter, who filed the original report Tuesday morning, and a witness. The mother of the child in question also was contacted, along with the named suspect. According to police, the suspect came up behind the babysitter and said hi. She then attempted to take the child's hand, but the woman intervened and said no. The suspect then left the area, the woman told police. A witness, Standridge said, told police that he recognized the suspect from seeing her panhandling on city streets. The chief said the witness reported no commotion or anything that would draw more attention to the situation. Standridge said the investigation warrants more time to determine what happened. But, he said, officers talked to the suspect and she was verbally non-compliant with questioning. Social media and more incidents. The post, which has since been removed by Facebook, also included photographs of the suspect and a picture of the suspect's vehicle. Comments on the post included one by another parent, claiming the same woman attempted to kidnap her child earlier in the month. Standridge said this claim is false. That incident, he said, involved a pickup truck, while the Nelson Park incident involved a Buick sedan. In the previous incident, the child and parent were walking together when the child went ahead of the parent. A pickup pulled up and a woman exited the passenger side with a white blanket and approached the child. The mother reportedly said, "Hello, I'm right here." And the woman returned to the vehicle and it left the scene, Standridge said. The mother called the police anyway, and as she was speaking with police, the vehicle returned and officers made contact, Standridge said. I can definitely say the woman from that incident and the woman from Tuesday's incident are two totally different women, Standridge said. Although social media has connected the two, we have body camera and dash camera footage to show these are two completely separate incidents involving completely different women. Seeing as this situation began with a Facebook post, Standridge cautioned the public about circulating rumors on the platform, along with other social media avenues. We cannot treat Facebook and social media as a courtroom, he said. The police department isn't going to present all it knows and all of the evidence of what we know via social media. I don't think we want our police department doing that. Standridge said the department looked into more incidents that could involve potential child and human trafficking in Abilene. One incident was reported at Sears Park in August, where a red pickup was reportedly following a family. Another from June reported a man in a vehicle driving in Redbud Park minutes before curfew. Both incidents resulted in no contact with the suspect and provide no link back to the named suspect in the most recent incident. Based on what I've described and based on witnesses, what we have is deeply concerning behaviors in completely unrelated incidents, Standridge said. And now beginning with this article, these have been published Tuesday, August 18th. Brown County Sheriff says 15 arrested in child trafficking investigation. Staff report, Brownwood Bulletin. The Brown County Sheriff's Office released details Monday on a child trafficking investigation that earlier this month resulted in 15 arrests on charges of online solicitation of a minor. Multiple law enforcement agencies were involved, including the Abilene Police Department. According to a sheriff's office press release, the Texas Department of Public Safety Criminal Investigations Division, along with the Abilene Police Department, Brown County Sheriff's Office, and Brownwood Police Department, conducted a child trafficking operation in Brown County on August 6th and 7th. Possible fire on South College Hills, San Angelo Police asked drivers to avoid area by John Tufts. Firefighters are on the scene of a reported structure fire in the 4200 block of South College Hills Boulevard. Just after 3 p.m. Tuesday, August 18th, San Angelo Police asked drivers to avoid the 4200 block of South College Hills Boulevard near the Dollar General and Wildwood Drive due to structure fire. An employee at the Dollar General said there were flames inside the store, but the cause wasn't immediately known. Firefighters cleared the area just before 4 p.m. No cause of the fire was provided. The following is an update on a previously published article. Second annual event to feed homeless in honor of Lacey Connell, happening Wednesday. By Rosanna Aguilera. Originally published April 25th. Updated August 18th. Those who love Lacey Connell are committed to continuing the mission she started with an email the day before she was killed in a vehicle crash. April 26, 2020, marks 1 year since Connell passed away in a vehicle crash at age 29 on State Highway 158, 7 miles east of Midland. The day before the crash, she had emailed San Angelo Chief Richard Lopez about an idea to cook food for the homeless, and Lacey's first annual Feed the Need Memorial took place August 19, 2019. Richie's Hibachi on the Go cooked hibachi chicken, vegetables, and fried rice, just as Connell requested. On Wednesday, August 19th, friends and family have again planned an event to feed the homeless in her honor. Richie's Hibachi will be feeding people in need from 5 to 7 p.m. Sunday at Wesley United Methodist Church, 301 West 18th Street. Connell's friend of 5 years, Candace Martinez, said they want to help others the way her friend wanted. "It's everything she would have wanted. She was a giving soul," Martinez said. "She would give you the shirt off her back if you needed it." Connell's son, Dax, who turned 2 years old September 27, 2019, will be taken to his mother's resting place Sunday, where friends and family will release balloons to remember her. "He's so full of life, just like his mom was," Dax's grandmother, Amy Contreras, said. Contreras said they keep Connell's memory alive with photos and video and hope Dax will remember his mom for the giving person she was. "She loved to give. That's just who she was," Contreras said. "It's been a struggle this year, but we will keep her memory alive." Renewable Energy Project Online Near San Angelo, by Colin Murphy. A renewable energy project using the scorching West Texas sun recently came online near San Angelo. The Rambler Solar Project, occupying roughly 1,700 acres west of San Angelo, contains more than 733,000 high-efficiency solar panels, or bifacial modules. It is estimated the Rambler Social Facility will power the equivalent of 40,000 homes when operating at full capacity. The Rambler Solar Project is the second 200-megawatt Texas solar facility Duke Energy Renewables has brought online in Texas this year. Chris Fallon, president of Duke Energy Renewables, said the company was excited to contribute to the renewable energy needs of the region and the economy in Tom Green County. "We're pleased to continue our expansion of solar energy resources in Texas, which is experiencing an increasing demand for power," Fallon said. The Rambler Solar Project will bring significant economic benefit to the state and generate clean energy to meet the area's growing energy needs. Michael Looney, Vice President of Economic Development at the San Angelo Chamber of Commerce, said the impact of the Rambler Solar Project to the local economy will be felt in the schools and at the county level. These are huge investments of capital in areas that may seem like an unlikely place, and that's why they are generally very good for rural communities, Looney said. They can put money into the budgets of the independent school districts and the counties where otherwise it wouldn't be able to be generated. According to Looney, the challenges facing economic development in rural communities are substantially different from urban areas able to attract companies and projects due to a high number of established and skilled workers, resources, and other types of existing infrastructure. Looney said economic development in rural areas takes teamwork. Rural communities are special in that the effort is a lot harder to attract and foster economic development, Looney said. Local chambers of commerce, local economic development corporations, county commissioners, and school boards all have to work together as one single functioning team to study what types of economic development we want to see and what types of economic development initiatives are compatible with the region. Looney said one of the benefits of a development venture like the Rambler Solar Project is it fits with the economic dynamics of Tom Green County. The Rambler Solar Project is a largely automated and low-maintenance facility, and because it employs so few full-time technicians, Looney said it fits with an area like Tom Green County, which has a low average unemployment rate. According to Looney, a project that required large numbers of full-time workers would have a hard time finding the necessary staff to make it work. It's rare in the United States and Canada for very large corporations with large needs for personnel to move into a rural community, Looney said. They might be able to accommodate the power, construction, land availability, and water for a factory, but there's not enough infrastructure in the town to support the factory in the form of employees. So you could have situations where you have a college that can train. You've got all the land you want, the power and water capacity, but you just don't have the people. According to Looney, the San Angelo Chamber of Commerce encourages the development of enterprises such as the Rambler Solar Project because they benefit the community without straining local resources beyond what they can support. The reason why the Chamber of Commerce is a promoter of renewables projects is because you have a very large capital investment that has largely the same tax effect as a large factory, Looney said. But in the Concho Valley, usually under normal market conditions, we have about 3% unemployment, which is very low. That makes attracting a factory or a very large operation that needs employees very difficult. Looney also said ventures such as the solar farm project represent a diversification of the energy industry sector in Tom Green County. The project is also a way to use land that may not produce much return on investment until occupied by a renewable energy project. Renewables are really just part of the portfolio, Looney said. San Angelo, the Concho Valley, and Tom Green County are not totally dependent on renewable projects, but it's a natural organic development of our economy. Solar power plants are effectively robots. It runs itself. And so you have a very large capital investment on ranch land, rangeland, or farmland that might not produce a relatively very high yield to the landowner. So when you have a development like this, it means a lot to the county and the school districts that it's in. Texas Rangers promote first women and a doctorate holder as captains, by Elena Edgen. The Texas Department of Public Safety promoted three captains Tuesday, all historic firsts for the Texas Rangers, according to a DPS news release. On Tuesday, August 18th, Texas Ranger Lieutenants Wendy Wakeman and Melba Science became the first women to become captains. James Thomas, also a lieutenant, became the first known captain in modern history with a doctorate degree, according to the release. Thomas and Wakeman's promotions will be effective September 1st, and both will work at the Austin headquarters. Science was promoted May 15th and is stationed in Edinburgh. These three talented, dedicated professionals have excelled in positions throughout their DPS careers and have exhibited tremendous commitment to the people of Texas and our law enforcement partners, said Stephen McGraw, DPS director. I have the utmost confidence they will continue to make the department proud in their new roles within the Rangers. Wendy Wakeman. In Austin, she will oversee specialized teams. Wakeman joined DPS in 1998, starting as a trooper in Sulphur Springs. A decade later, she became a Texas Ranger in Conroe. She became the first woman in the department's history to become a Ranger Lieutenant. Wakeman is a graduate of the National Forensics Academy, International Association of Chiefs of Police Women's Leadership Institute, DPS Command College, and Sam Houston State University, where she earned her bachelor's degree in criminal justice. She has also completed the FBI Leadership Trilogy. James Thomas. Thomas will supervise the Sexual Assault Kit Initiative and the Forensic Artists Program in Austin. He graduated the DPS Academy in 2002 and started as a trooper around Baytown. He has served in Houston's Gang Unit and the U.S. Marshals Service Gulf Coast Violent Offenders Task Force. Thomas was also stationed in El Paso and Waco. Thomas earned a criminal justice bachelor's degree and a doctoral degree in educational leadership from Lamar University. He also has a master's degree in behavioral science from the University of Houston, Clear Lake. Thomas's duties in Austin will include supervising the Sexual Assault Kit Initiative and the Forensic Artists Program. Melba Science. Science served as a police officer in Mission and the McAllen Independent School District before joining DPS in 2003 as a McAllen area trooper. She joined the Rangers in 2008 and became a lieutenant while stationed in Edinburgh in 2015. Science manages six Joint Operations Intelligence Centers, JOICs, from El Paso to the Rio Grande Valley, and field operations for the Drawbridge Program in South Texas. She is also a graduate of the DPS Leadership Development School and DPS Leadership College. San Angelo Man publishing first novel, set to release in January 2021, by Rosanna Aguilera. A San Angelo Man is publishing his first novel, which is set to release in January 2021. B.J. Mayo, 64, lives on a 200-acre farm about 20 miles outside of San Angelo, where he raises sheep. He was born in Snyder and worked in the energy industry for 43 years, which took him through seven states and three foreign countries. Mayo retired about 12 years ago and began writing his book, Alfie Carter, a novel, 6 years ago. The novel is fiction, but is based on real-life events that took place in Angola. Jacquelina Ndenga, a young Angolian girl, is the focus of the story. Her village was wiped out by soldiers when she was 12 years old, give or take, Mayo said. She is led to an orphanage on the west coast of Africa, known as Benguela by the Sea, which is a compound run by missionaries from America. The only person that can communicate with her is a woman named Margaret, who can speak her language, Mayo said. The woman tells Ndenga how she survived the horrible things that happened to her village, so she must have a greater purpose in life. Ndenga sees a mercy ship that has made its yearly visit to the orphanage and is now preparing to return to America, and she decides to stow away. Someone helps her every step of the way, Mayo said. Her journey takes her across the ocean, into the arms of New York City's customs officials, and finally into placement in an orphanage in Texas. She meets Alfie Carter, a workaholic, small-town detective who is fighting his own battles. His life is forever changed when he meets a young African girl looking for her higher purpose, Mayo said. The book will be released on January 5th, 2021. Pre-orders are available on Amazon. I like to write, and this was a narrative that was stuck in my head for a long time, Mayo said. This is the first book Mayo has published, but he has 22 novels structured. I am constantly writing, Mayo said. There is a broad spectrum of material I have covered. Ruptured pipeline starts fire near Midkiff in West Texas. No injuries reported, by Elena Edgen. A pipeline ruptured Tuesday morning in West Texas, creating a fire and what some witnesses described on social media as an explosion. The incident happened near Midkiff, an unincorporated community in Upton County, about 35 miles south of Midland. Around 7:45 a.m. Tuesday, August 18th, the Midland Fire Department responded to a fire caused by a large ruptured pipeline near a Midland County electrical substation. The fire was isolated to a 100-yard radius and is under control, according to Aaron Bailey, a public information officer for Midland. The pipeline is owned by Targa Resources, which will conduct an internal investigation into the case, Bailey said. San Angelo names alternate health authorities to fill gaps when Dr. Vretes is out of town, by John Tufts. City Council officials named two alternate physicians Tuesday to serve as public health authorities in the absence of Dr. James Vretes, who said both the city and county deserved better health care during times he was unavailable. Vretes said he had other duties that sometimes required him to be away from the city, and it was critical to have an alternate health authority ready to step in whenever necessary. There have been times when I've responded as a tactical physician for the Texas Department of Public Safety and Houston Police Department and other agencies that I was out of phone contact. San Angelo and Tom Green County deserve better, Vretes said. On Tuesday, August 18th, City Council appointed Dr. Emily Barkanick and, in the event of her absence, Dr. Kimry Daniel as alternate local health authorities on the consent agenda. Either Barkanick or Daniel will carry out the duties set forth in the Texas Health and Human Safety Code when needed. They have been functioning as associate health authorities when I've been out of town already, Vretes said, and stated Tuesday's decision by City Council formalized their positions. What does the local health authority do? The local health authority is a physician appointed to administer state and local laws relating to public health within their jurisdiction of a city or county. Some of their duties include 1. Establishing, maintaining, and enforcing quarantine in their jurisdiction. 2. Helping state health officials with local quarantine, inspection, disease prevention and suppression, birth and death statistics, and general sanitation, which includes reporting the presence of contagious, infectious, and dangerous epidemic diseases. 3. Reporting on any subject on which it is proper for DSHS to direct that a report be made. 4. Helping state health officials in the enforcement of proper rules, requirements, and ordinances, sanitation laws, quarantine rules, and vital statistics collections. Last week, Vretes ordered a Cristoval business to immediately suspend hosting outdoor events, citing concerns about COVID-19. Officials said they received complaints that large groups of people who attended outdoor concerts at Cooper's Barbecue, 20809 Highway 277 South in Cristoval, weren't wearing masks or practicing social distancing to limit the spread of the virus. I don't necessarily want to shut Cooper's down, Vretes said. I just want it to be safe. Vretes later rescinded the order after the business owners submitted a new plan to both him and to Tom Green County Judge Steve Floyd to better enforce social distancing at Cooper's Barbecue. The following articles I'll be reading next were published Monday, August 17th. U.S. Senator John Cornyn makes stop at Angelo State. Area gets $35 million in COVID relief funds, by John Tufts. U.S. Senator John Cornyn, Republican Texas, announced Monday at Angelo State University that various entities in the San Angelo area have been allocated more than $34 million in COVID-19 relief from Congress. On Monday, August 17th, Cornyn stood in the C.J. Davidson Conference Center before an audience that included local, county, and state officials, as well as members of the local media. He said entities in the San Angelo area were allocated $34,874,777 in federal coronavirus relief resources from Congress. Cornyn was joined on stage by Texas Tech University System Chancellor Dr. Ted Mitchell and newly appointed Angelo State University President, Lieutenant General, retired, Ronnie Hawkins. Earlier Monday, on the first day students returned to class, the three toured a classroom reconfigured for hybrid learning with resources provided through the CARES Act, according to a news release. Cornyn and other officials later helped pass out face masks paid for by the CARES Act to students on the mall. As of Monday, the nearly $35 million in funding for the San Angelo area Cornyn helped secure has been distributed the following ways. City of San Angelo, $5,488,670. $95,000 for masks, gloves, and sanitation supplies. $22,500 for telework equipment. $83,000 for housing and rental assistance. $64,000 for non-congregate sheltering for citizens. $12,500 for educational signage on social distancing. Tom Green County, $1,067,330. $26,800 for social distancing partitions. $13,000 for COVID testing. $7,195 for PPE. Angelo State University, $6,829,574. 2,311 students received $3,179,781 in aid, built a health screening app, purchased masks, cleaning equipment, sanitizer, and thermometers, procured educational equipment to transition to virtual learning. San Angelo ISD, $2,848,284. 74,410 masks, 2,500 face shields, 2,200 pairs of gloves, 458 thermometers. San Angelo Regional Airport, $1,227,539. Concho Valley Transit District, $4,238,812. Local healthcare facilities, $13,174,568. Concho Valley Regional Food Bank awarded $5,000 donation from USI Insurance Services by Rosanna Aguilera. The Concho Valley Regional Food Bank has been awarded a $5,000 donation from USI Insurance Services, with a chance to double the amount. USI Insurance Services earned a 2020 Make More Happen Award, which recognized its volunteer work with the Concho Valley Regional Food Bank, according to a news release. The award included a $5,000 donation, which can be increased to $10,000 later this week. On Wednesday, August 19th, the story of USI Insurance Services and the Concho Valley Regional Food Bank will be featured on the official Make More Happen microsite. That website URL is www.agentgiving.com/USI-Southwest. If the story receives at least 500 shares to Facebook, the donation will be doubled to $10,000. Ken Roberts, an agent with USI Insurance Services, has been involved with the Concho Valley Regional Food Bank for the past 18 years and currently serves as board president. My family lived in poverty when I was a child, and as a result, we were often food insecure. I decided early on that my children would not suffer the same circumstances, and I would do what I could to make sure as many people as possible didn't either, Robert said. We are truly grateful for the Make More Happen Award because it is an incredible opportunity for us to provide much-needed funds to support the Concho Valley Regional Food Bank's important work. The $10,000 would allow the food bank to expand its children's feeding programs, providing approximately 80,000 meals to hungry children and families in the Concho Valley area, according to a news release. Our agents truly carry the ball when it comes to stepping up and volunteering for important causes in their local communities, said Jennifer Hawkins, Liberty Mutual Insurance, San Angelo Central Texas Region Territory Manager. The Make More Happen program gives our agents an opportunity to make an even greater impact in areas like San Angelo, and we hope it inspires local residents to get out and support local charities. Keep justice moving. How Tom Green County Courts Are Overcoming COVID-19 Obstacles, by Elena Edgen. Since COVID-19 hit San Angelo and the surrounding area in March, Tom Green County court officials have fought to keep the court systems going even when courtrooms were empty. Despite jury trials being on pause for several months, Tom Green County court officials have powered through the pandemic with quick adaptations to the COVID-19 environment. The biggest common misconception was that we were closed, but we've been open for business every day under a restricted access setting, said Anthony Monaco, district clerk for the county. Monaco, with District Attorneys John Best, 119th, and Allison Palmer, 51st, believe there are some good changes that have developed during this time. The pandemic has forced us to reevaluate the way we conduct our business to ensure the safety of all the participants involved in our criminal justice system, Best said. We have learned that it is possible to conduct some meetings and hearings remotely, which may prove very beneficial going forward. The district attorneys adjusted their employees to work from home when the pandemic began. The move from offices has put systems in place that could be a good change for parents post-pandemic, according to Palmer. For example, if one of us has a sick child and needs to stay home, but could still work, this would enable that employee to work from home. Employees have also been working in offices on a rotating schedule. Zoom, a video conferencing program, has helped court proceedings continue to move along. As horrible as these times have been, it has opened minds to new ways of thinking in regards to how we conduct business, Monaco said. With the move to electronic filing and becoming paperless, it has definitely made these times a lot less stressful. Another bonus to the paperless route has been saving taxpayers money, according to Monaco, by not needing to budget for ink, stamps, or paper. Paperwork being filed and reviewed ahead of time, even in pre-trial hearings, has also moved cases along. Each of the offices have been just as busy as ever, and not having the ability to schedule jury trials has been an issue. Without the ticking clock of an upcoming jury trial, it has become difficult for involved parties to come to agreements. We already had a backlog, and this is not helping, Palmer said. A lot of cases don't necessarily go to trial and are usually finished with agreements. A lot of the time, we can't come to agreement terms unless a trial is set. Both attorneys look forward to returning to the courtrooms in person and restarting jury trials. I think we're going to be fighting each other to be the one going to trials, Palmer said about her staff. We're ready to get back to the contested stuff. Best added that even though the future is unclear, he looks forward to safely beginning jury trials. Although it's impossible to know how this virus will evolve, I am hopeful that we will continue to increase the number of cases resolved remotely, and that we will soon be able to participate in a safe process for again conducting jury trials, Best said. On August 6th, the Texas Supreme Court issued an emergency order that pushed jury proceedings to after October 1st, 2020, The order allows existing grand juries to continue meeting. A candid interview with Ronnie Hawkins, Angelo State University's first black president, by John Tufts. Retired Lieutenant General Ronnie D. Hawkins, Jr. remembers it was a literal knock on the door that brought him to Angelo State University, an opportunity he credits with molding him into the person he is today. Hawkins has been named Angelo State University's 11th president in the 92-year history of the institution and its first black president. The appointment was finalized during a ceremony early Monday, August 17th. The Texas Tech University System Board of Regents named Hawkins the sole finalist for the position in July after the sudden departure of then-president Brian May. More than 100 applications were considered for this role in a nationwide search. Hawkins was unanimously approved at the conclusion of a special called board meeting, according to the Texas Tech University website. Nearly 50 years ago, Hawkins' father was in Vietnam when an ASU track coach arrived at his home to speak with Hawkins and his mother about his plans for the future. "People think that a lot of my structure and discipline came with being in the military, but I got it here, in sports and academics at Angelo State," Hawkins said. What to know about Ronnie Hawkins? Born in Anchorage, Alaska, Hawkins traveled around the country growing up because his father served in the military. The family later moved to San Angelo, and Hawkins graduated from Central High School, then attended ASU on a track and field scholarship, earning a Bachelor of Business Administration with a degree in computer science in 1977. Hawkins has earned 3 master's degrees and completed a program for senior managers in government at Harvard University. Hawkins' 37-year tenure in the U.S. Air Force culminated in his appointment as the director of the Defense Information Systems Agency at Fort Meade, Maryland, where he led a $10.2 billion global organization of 14,000 military and civilian personnel who provided direct support to the U.S. President, Secretary of Defense, Joint Chiefs of Staff, combatant commanders, Department of Defense components, and other mission partners. Hawkins and his wife Maria, his high school sweetheart, who also attended ASU, were named Co-Citizens of the Year by the San Angelo Chamber of Commerce in 2019. The couple has been married for more than 45 years. Ronnie and Maria have 2 sons, Colonel Ronnie Hawkins III, Lieutenant Colonel Joshua Hawkins, and a daughter, Christine Honesty. Ronnie and Maria are known for their philanthropy and missionary work through the nonprofit organization they founded, Ezra Visions Ministries, which has spent years helping Haitians displaced by the deadly 2010 earthquake. Hawkins' family is heavily invested with education in San Angelo and throughout Texas. His nephew, a graduate of ASU, is the principal at Lakeview High School. Hawkins' niece is a soccer coach in Austin. His sister-in-law taught English at Edison Junior High. The Standard Times recently was given the opportunity to sit down with Hawkins in the president's office at ASU for a one-on-one interview, which has been edited and condensed here for clarity. How Hawkins became president of ASU. Question: you have a lot of family members who are teachers and educators. Did that factor into your decision to become the president of Angelo State University? How did all this happen? Hawkins: well, it all happened not on a whim by any stretch of the imagination. It was through a lot of prayer and thought that Maria and I decided to go ahead and enter into the opportunity to be the president. That also came as, if you will, a shock with Dr. May resigning. There was nothing about my family's career and education that came into it, but I also leaned on my sister-in-law as I was putting my application together, so I had a couple of editors helping. Well, that brings up a good question for those who have never applied to be the president of a major university. What's the process like? It's pretty intense. I got to tell you that. They give you an opportunity to give them what they call a letter of interest, and you need to get your entire career together, a biography vitae, a CV, and you put your thoughts down on paper of what your strengths are and what you could bring to Angelo State University. That's what I did, and 3.5 months later, after having gone through an interview process, here we are. How Angelo State made Hawkins the person he is today. Question. Out of all the things that you listed on your application, is there anything that you are particularly most proud of? Hawkins. Well, my time here at Angelo State, I credit the teachers that I had here, the coaches that I had here, and also in Central High School. That structure and focus on accountability. You get that when you're a strong safety on a football team with 15,000 people in the stadium and you let somebody catch a pass over your back. There's nobody else that you can say it's their fault. Other than football, are there any particular instructors or classes at Angelo State that you feel helped you become the person you are today? Well, I didn't play football at Angelo State. I ran track. I was on a track scholarship. And that coach is the one who recruited me. He came to my house, and my father was in Vietnam at the time, and he talked to my mother. We want Ronnie to come here for the curriculum and graduate from Angelo State. And that person was David Noble. And so, that's what sold me on ASU. Hawkins first had a different career in mind. I initially came in thinking I was going to be a medical technologist. I loved biology in high school. Didn't love it so much when I got here with the labs. I had nothing against the teachers at all. It just wasn't my cup of tea. And so I decided to look for something else and landed on computer science as a Bachelor of Business Administration. I struggled through it the last part of my freshman year, but my professor was a very structured individual and got me through it. And so, again, because of that structure, because of that discipline, and because of that accountability, here we are today. Guiding ASU through COVID-19, it's not about you. Question. Speaking of today, we're living through two major historical moments. One of them is a global pandemic. As president of Angelo State, what do you feel your role here is in guiding the university through this particular time? Well, you just named it, guiding the school through the pandemic. I believe we've got the right leadership in place. The interim president, Ms. Angie Wright, did an incredible job of getting the school postured to where we are right now. The faculty, the staff, everybody has been working toward this moment to bring the students back in onto campus. I feel very, very confident that we collectively, the Ram family, are going to get through the pandemic. So I don't make light of it by any stretch of the imagination, but the ability and the opportunity to lead is something that I'm looking forward to, and I believe we'll get that done. What challenges are you going to have to overcome to get that done? The biggest one right now is getting everyone to believe it's not about them. It's about the people around you. Before this interview, I was outside taking a picture, and we had to stop a young man and tell him to put his face mask on. We drove past another individual. They saw us coming, and they put their face mask on. So it's about being responsible for other people, and that's going to be the biggest challenge. It doesn't take away from everybody's individual freedoms. When you come on the university campus, you've got to realize it's not just about one individual. It's about everybody else. So getting everybody in that mindset is something that's going to take time, energy, and discipline, and holding them accountable. Hawkins' thoughts on protests and equality. Question. The other major historical event we're living through involves nationwide protests against racism. You are the first black president of Angelo State University. There were ASU students taking part in those protests here in San Angelo. What's your message to students who want to protest and are advocating for justice and more equality? The message is this. Protesting and freedom of thought and speech are one thing. Riots are something different. I've watched and been part of at the tail end of the civil rights protests that took place, and I know the difference between those two things. A protest that's peaceful and peaceable are the things that I embrace and believe in. I believe that everybody's life matters. I recognize the slogan of Black Lives Matter, and it's not lost on me that I'm the first black president here at Angelo State University. I'm very proud of that, but we still have to get things done in a peaceful and orderly manner. I have no problem with protests. I have problems with riots and destruction. I have problems with indiscriminate killing of individuals on either side. We've all got to hold each other accountable to those things. What Hawkins wants to achieve at ASU. Question. Do you have any specific goals in mind during your tenure as president of Angelo State University? One of the biggest goals is getting everybody through the pandemic right now. I also want our sports teams back on the field and in the arenas and wherever else they might be competing, and doing that in a manner that is both possible while being protective of all individuals. We've got an accreditation that's coming upon Angelo State in a couple of years that we have to be postured for. We're looking forward to the centennial celebration of Angelo State in about 8 years. All of those things come together to make this not necessarily a challenge, but goals and objectives that we all need to work toward. What's the biggest thing on your agenda? The biggest thing is to graduate the class of 2024 that just stepped onto campus, as well as the graduating class in the latter part of 2020 and in 2021, too. So we've got a lot of focus areas to work toward while sharpening our pencils and making sure we have the greatest faculty that this university can provide, not just to the students, but to the world. We want to produce students that everybody wants from Angelo State. Types of individuals who work across the United States, but particularly here in Texas and West Texas. What Hawkins wants to be remembered for. Question. You're about to begin your tenure as the president of Angelo State University. When it's all done, what do you want to be remembered for? A servant leader at Angelo State who strived to make everybody better. Being on the staff or on the faculty, everybody's got a gift, and we want to be able to use those gifts in a positive and productive manner. San Angelo Demonstrators Raise Awareness of Human Trafficking by Colin Murphy. Demonstrators in San Angelo staged an event Saturday, August 15th to raise awareness about human trafficking. Organizer Sarah Olguin said the event was a way to send a message about the dangers of human trafficking, how to prevent the illegal practice, and how to recognize signs someone is being trafficked. We want people to be aware of the problem we have in this country, Olguin said. We also want people to know what to do to help prevent this. That's the main focus. Olguin recommended a website for more information about human trafficking and sex trafficking, with a special emphasis on the dangers posed to children. According to information on the OurRescue.org website, children are especially vulnerable to human traffickers. This article was published on Friday, August 15th. Affidavit states San Angelo man held woman at gunpoint while choking her, by Elena Edgen. Update. This article was updated to clarify some details in the arrest affidavit. A San Angelo man has been arrested after a woman reported her ex-husband was trying to enter her home with a firearm, according to an arrest affidavit. About 3:30 a.m. Sunday, August 9th, San Angelo police responded to a domestic disturbance call in the 12,000 block of Old Mill Road. A woman told dispatchers her ex-husband tried to enter her residence with a gun after firing it several times, according to the affidavit. The man choked the woman with one hand and held a pistol to her head with the other, records state. Officers found the man at the residence sitting in a lawn chair in the driveway and shell casings nearby. A search of the man's car revealed a black pistol. Obed Jimenez, 31, was arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault on a family member with a deadly weapon. He was released from Tom Green County Detention Center on a $50,000 bond the next day, according to online jail records. Summer heat putting a strain on San Angelo plants, by Allison Watkins, Texas A&M AgriLife Extension. There have been many questions coming in lately regarding sick and stressed plants. Trees have dropped leaves, shrubs are getting scorched, and some perennials are looking a bit rough. It's been a hot, dry summer, and this is always stressful on certain plants, but even more so when it follows a rainy spring. The sudden change is hard to adjust to. Some plants thrive in the most extreme summer heat. Pride of Barbados and sweet potato vine, for example. In landscape planning, remember that diversity is good. Include a variety of plants with different strengths and requirements to have something showy and happy all year long. For plants that aren't thriving right now, take the time to evaluate irrigation methods and timing. Summer heat certainly causes plants to need more irrigation than cooler seasons, but proper watering, deep and infrequent, throughout the year, can help plants develop deeper roots, which can help them withstand summer temperatures. If you suspect something other than just summer heat, consider all the possibilities. Weed killer damage, nutrient deficiency, insect pests, disease, etc. Disease can be difficult to diagnose in plants. Try sending a sample to the Texas A&M Plant Disease Diagnostic Laboratory. Visit plantclinic.tamu.edu for info and to print the submission form. The charge is $35 for routine diagnostic service, and this can be a big help in determining the cause of plant stress. But what is causing the trouble for many plants right now is simply heat and drought. Add plenty of mulch for planting beds and even container-grown plants to conserve moisture in the soil. Cut back perennials now to get a flush of healthy new growth for fall blooms. Give pecan trees extra water. They are not drought-tolerant plants. There is a term called August drop that is used to refer to pecans dropping nuts and leaves in late summer. This is a pretty common occurrence and is just a response of the tree to high temperatures, not a sign that the tree is dying. If plants have yellow, stunted leaves with green veins, this is probably a sign of iron deficiency. Try spraying the leaves with a liquid iron fertilizer and work on increasing organic matter in the soil around the plants. Iron chlorosis is especially common on hollies, pears, and junipers, but can affect many others. Iron deficiency is caused by the high soil pH, but is also made worse by water imbalance, too much or too little. Allison Watkins is the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Agent for Horticulture in Tom Green County. Contact her at aewatkins@ag.tamu.edu.
Thank you for joining us for this reading of the San Angelo Standard Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.